Hello and welcome to Room Musicians Don't Starve. My name is Michael Elsner, and today, I'm so excited about this one. I have a good friend of mine for many years, Nomad, who's coming to us all the way from Burbank, California. And well, I'll tell you, I'm going to go down a bit of his credit list, and you're going to be pretty blown away. He has worked with Stevie Wonder, Sting, Babyface, David Foster, Celine Dion, Barbara Streisand. I remember when you did that record a number of years ago. He's also had a lot of music of his own on TV shows. In fact, we share a lot of similar TV show placements. Actually, there have been times where I've actually looked through a cue sheet and I'll text him or call him up and say, hey man, we both have some music on the same show. But he's had music on So You Think You Can Dance, American Idol, Who Do You Think You Are on NBC, License to Kill, the Bradshaw Bunch, which is coming up on, was it Bravo, right?
Yeah.
And then was it Hintrified on
Netflix?
On Netflix, and Beats the Movie also on Netflix. So he's done a couple things here and there. So welcome, Nomad. I'm so happy to have you here with us today.
Thank you, Michael. I'm so glad to be here. And actually, we do share the same birth name. Mine, you know, Michael Nomad Rapol.
Yeah, I still just call you Michael most of the time. So,
well, there's a good story for my Nomad alias, my artist alias. There's a good story.
Oh, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Well, basically, look, I was born Michael Rapol and Michael Douglas Rapol. My mom had a big crush on Michael Douglas, the actor, for those of you who are my age. But my last name, Rapol, is Cuban, right? My father's from Cuba, and it's a Latin name. In fact, Shakira, she has the same last name, Shakira Rapol. We share the same last name. In South America, Rapol is a very common name, same as in Cuba. The problem is when I started doing albums, people didn't know how to spell it or pronounce it. So they would put Ripley, Ripple, Rapoli, and all these different variations. Now, it frustrated the heck out of me, especially when you're talking about liner notes when back on CDs. I mean, I started my session career in Nashville in the early 2000s. So that was a big deal. So if I opened up a Toby Mac CD, you know, from DC Talk, and I saw, you know, guitars, Mike Rapoli, that would just... So I developed this alias Nomad, and as modern day musicians, we're all nomadic by nature. Yeah. And my father being from Cuba and my mom's Italian, I figured, Nomad, it fits. And I've moved, and actually the crux of the matter, here it is, I've had more than 25 physical addresses in my life. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's quite a bit. Yeah. I
know. That is a lot. That's a lot of moving.
It's almost an address every 2 years.
Yeah.
Well,
it's funny when I think of my first 4.5 years in Nashville, I think I had 5 different addresses.
There you go. I at least had 4 or 5 when I was in Nashville for 8 years. Yeah.
That's funny. So that's interesting, because I always thought the name came from the fact that you were always out traveling, you know, because...
As modern day musicians, touring, that is part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of the time that I knew you, or at least the first, a good portion of the first, I guess I've known you for 15 years. So I'd say a good portion of the first 10 years, you were never around.
Yeah. It's funny. I think, perhaps you're right. I started when I moved to California in 2005 from Nashville. I got the American Idols live tour. Yeah. Right away. And that was the year with Carrie Underwood, where she was the winner. In fact, I think we talked about this. I got Carrie Underwood her McPherson guitars deal.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah, I'm responsible for putting a McPherson in her hands. So, but anyway, like to pat myself on the shoulder, that's silly. But that was my first big tour. We went out for like almost 6 months. And I guess, you know, being in LA and having a big tour, it's a lot of fun. I think it's a great experience, and I think, you know, it's fun and you learn a lot.
Oh, sure. Oh yeah. Yeah. I remember when you came to town, cause I remember I met you, and it was like about a month later, you were out on that road, on that gig.
That's right. We had a couple mutual friends, and I can't remember.
John Massey
was one, Catherine Wood, but who's the one that actually introduced
it, was John? It was John. Yeah, it was John. It was actually, I met you at that, and I, for whatever reason, I cannot think of the name of it. It was at Jazz Club between Woodman and...
Spaghetti.
And, No, not Spaghettini. Spaghettini was down off of the 405. It was the one in the valley in Sherman Oaks.
Sorry, Woodman and yeah.
It was like past. It was like by Guitar Center.
Catalina. No. Catalina Jazz Club. No. Oh my gosh! How come I can't believe this?
Yeah,
it closed.
It closed.
It was one of the hot spots in LA for many years.
Yeah, I know. And I can't believe I forgot the name of it either. But yeah, it was right by the Ralphs and right off of Ventura Boulevard.
I think the moral of that story is don't open a jazz club.
I actually still remember the night that we met and the conversation that we had. I still remember that.
Really? What was it?
Well, there was a guy, I was explaining a little road rage issue that was happening on the 101. Earlier that day, and I remember you were just and I was really angry about this guy who was having road rage, and yeah. I remember you were just something. You said something along the lines of like, "Man, you just got to go home and practice guitar and get over it."
Are you serious?
Yeah, there was some guy who was like weaving in and out of traffic. He was just being a fan. I remember I showed up and I was just venting about this idiot on the 101 coming here. What a mess, you know, and. You're like, just go home and practice guitar. You'll get over it.
Awesome. I love that.
So you've had a pretty phenomenal career. It's been awesome watching, you know, all the cool things that have happened for you. And you know, we've stayed really good friends, you know, since we initially met. But one of the questions I always love to ask every successful musician that I get to talk to is I really love to ask and find out how they define success. Because we all see success from a different perspective. So how do you define success being a career musician?
In short, and I'll expound on this after, but in short, doing what you love and being able to make a living from it. That's success, you know, in short. And what do I mean by that? Well, I'll start by saying this. I'm very selfish. So I'm selfish with my time. I don't like to give my time away to people. In fact, I'm a social person. I love being social. I love hanging out, love talking to friends, you know, but once it infringes upon my time where I feel like I need to be doing X, Y, Z, I'm like, yo, no, I need my time. Sorry. Gotta go. Okay, great. Bye. So I think as musicians, a lot of us tend to be like that. Why are we like that? I think it's a conditioning because we have to sacrifice so many hours to get good on our instrument, guitar, drums, keys, vocals. I don't care what it is or all of the above or any mix thereof. You need that time. So, and we all know that time is the most precious of commodities because you can never get it back, right? Mm-hmm. And you finally realize that when you get to your mid-40s and you're like, holy shit, you mean I'm going to die? I don't want to die. So I think again, the definition of a success, doing what you love and being able to like sustain yourself mm-hmm. without sacrificing, giving away your time to somebody else, i.e. a big conglomerate boss that you just have no interest in dealing with that company or being there, but yet you have to go there every day and give in your 8-9 hours of time. Mm-hmm. So that's success, being able to control your own time and still not starve, obviously.
Right. So, you know, one of the things about you specifically is, I mean, you're a unbelievably gifted musician in a lot of different ways. Your talent and skill set is phenomenal. Stylistically, even what you can play on the guitar, you know, you're probably the most diverse guitar player that I know, in the fact that you can cover rock just so well. And then of course pop. And then you've got the Spanish flamenco, you know, skill set as well. I mean, I encourage everyone to go listen to Nomad play. His playing is unbelievable. And he played for many years with Babyface and was Babyface's music director. And you've been able to work with so many different artists along the way. But aside from the skill set, of course, everything with music starts by developing the skill set, right? But then we also have a mindset and we also have the actions that we have to take that allow us to, you know, achieve the goals that we're after. Aside from the skill set and all the years you've spent developing your ability on the guitar, what would you say has been the biggest contributor to the success that you've had as a musician?
Right. The biggest contribution to the success is more of a philosophical and psychological and social conditioning. like I said, I'm selfish with my time. And in the beginning, I was very introverted too. I learned to become more extroverted as I had my first gigs down in South Florida on Miami Beach and, you know, learning how to play in front of an audience at these clubs, these nightclubs where I was playing 5-6 nights a week. So I came out of that introversion. I became extroverted. So I do believe you have to have a good social hang. You have to be a good hang. And I did work on that. And it was a conscious effort, but it was also a metamorphosis over time. The next thing was I had to make sure that I had some business acumen. I was always a very regimented person. Even when I was a kid, my parents would say, hey, you know, you could go out and play and do this and that. And I was like, no, I'm fine. I just want to stay here and study and work on my guitar. And that's it. You know, so I always had this regimented routine, develop some discipline, some consistency. Right. I truly believe that if you talk to a trainer, they're going to tell you, look, I can have you shredded in 6 months if you consistently do X, Y, Z. Well, I can have you playing really good guitar in 6 months if you consistently do X, Y, Z. Well, I can give you a great career in music, maybe not 6 months, maybe it may take a little while, but you have to consistently do X, Y, Z. And those were some of the things I did. So that discipline, that consistency, develop a good social, you know, vibe about yourself, and then business acumen, man. Learn how to balance your freaking checkbook. Nowadays, you don't have to balance your checkbook. It's all online, but you know, understand accounts receivable, accounts payable, understand how to manage your money and budget some things, understand projections or a profit and loss statement for your business. Understand that you're going to need to incorporate or get an LLC because you're going to get some tax breaks that might help you. You know, understand the art of delegation. When you don't understand something, delegate it to a professional. I've always had an accountant, always. From the time I was 18 to now, I've had an accountant. That's 30 years. Shh, don't tell anybody. I've never been without an accountant. Why? Because I know I hate doing taxes. It's just not something I want to do. I don't even though I have the internet at my face, I don't want to study. I don't want to do that. I'm selfish with my time, remember? Yeah. So if I'm not going to study on how to do my tax return, then I'm going to hire a professional who knows how to do it. Those are some of the things.
I love hearing that. I've never done my taxes myself. I agree. I've always had someone do them for me. And I have people ask me a lot, like, you know, when do I need to set up an LLC? When do I need to do this? And I always tell them, your accountant will tell you when you need to do it. I don't know when, because I didn't just do it. I did it when I was told, hey, you know what? Maybe you need to start thinking about this next year because you're going to save money this way, or you're going to be able to do stuff, as far as running the business in a slightly different way that's more beneficial in the long run. And the reality is, yeah, you have to actually work with other individuals who are professionals at what they do to tell you and help you run your business accordingly. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about it lately. This phrase, it's been in my head the last couple of days, but it was never written somewhere ever in any book or any magazine or anything like that for musicians that says that in order to be a musician, you have to be stupid when it comes to business. Because the reality is that every business, every musician is an entrepreneur. We are creating a product, we're providing a service, and we are putting that out into the world. Most musicians are also independent contractors, just like the guy mowing your lawn or fixing your back patio is an independent contractor.
I use the IC term all the time. We are independent contractors. That's right.
Yeah. And, you know, I loved what you said about consistency. You talked earlier about Carrie Underwood and a good friend of mine plays guitar for her. And I interviewed him recently for the podcast, and his name is Matt Revere. And I asked him, you know, what his, what the biggest contributing factor to his success is. And he actually said the phrase, I asked him, like, what's been the most, what has contributed the most to your consistent success? That's how I phrased it to him. And he said, the secret to my consistency as a musician is my consistency as a musician. And I thought, what a great way to look at it, you know, kind of like you very regimented in sticking with a schedule and developing the skill set and constantly working at it and growing, because it's important. You are an entrepreneur, and entrepreneurs are constantly learning and growing and reading and building their business.
I have, you know, 5 or 6 different computers, and on each of them I have you know, umpteen browsers open all the time because I'm always studying, right? You know, yeah. I'm sure you're the same way. That consistency. And here's the deal. As entrepreneurs, if we're starving, it's our fault.
Yeah.
If we're rolling in the dough, it's our fault. So,
yeah,
you know, we have the power to do either.
Yeah. And that's why I love the idea and the phrase real musicians don't starve. When we say that, you know, we're actually, you know, we own it, because the truth is real musicians, if you're a real musician, you're not out there starving. If you're a real entrepreneur, you're not out there starving. You're valuing what you do, because if you don't value it, no one else will. Right. So you have to value what you do, and you have to look at it like a business. But then at the same point, you know, not everything is always, you know, blue skies and roses. There are tough times in the industry as well. And so aside from, you know, having all the success, there's also going to be the downturns and just the, like this, like what we're going through right now with, you know, COVID and stuff. Oh, a lot of musicians are out of work and whatnot. So my question to you is what is the mindset? What do you tell yourself to overcome either these downturns in the industry or even like rejection? You know, we've never landed every gig we've been offered. You know, how do you overcome that? And how do you navigate your way around those times in the industry?
It's a great question. All your questions are great. And yes, I do agree. I love that phrase, that term, real musicians don't starve. Kudos to you. You coined it. Okay. So how do I navigate around, you know, rejection and the ups and downs of life and all these different things? Well, first of all, I have to remind myself on a daily basis to get out of my own way. So the biggest enemy I have is my own mind. Right. And we all have that, we as human beings. And I was talking to a friend the other day and I said, you know, it's funny because emotions suck and they suck the life right out of you, because they do, because we have the ability to emote. We are emotive beings. Right. They suck the life out of us, because as our little internal dialogue goes, well, you shouldn't do this because you're not good enough to do that. And you shouldn't have said that. And I can't believe you did that. And you're just lazy and this and that. By the time you go through all that, you're exhausted. It sucked the life out of you, you know?
Yeah.
So I have to remind myself on a daily basis, get out of my own way. And I'll expound a little further. But naturally, I'm a pessimistic person. I'm a Cuban Italian who was born and raised in New York. And I have this real hard New York edge to me. And I'm always like, forget this. Like I have that innately in me. I could go there right away like an old Italian mobster. Like, I swear, you could say to me, oh, it's a beautiful day. I said, what the hell makes it a beautiful day, Mike? I don't give a shit about this freaking beautiful day. You know, like, and all of a sudden you're like, man, that guy's angry. Like, what's his problem?
Yeah, slightly bitter.
But then I come around, I'm like, no. Now I'm like, no, it is a beautiful day. If I see a neighbor walking by, I'm like, hey, how you doing? Oh, good. How are you? It's a beautiful day, right? Yeah, it's gorgeous. You know, it's like, I'm learning that, and I've learned that over time. So number one is get out of my own way and remind myself to recondition my mind, my mindset. I have to recondition my mind. And it's something that I have to do. Not everybody has to do that. I think, from what I know of you, I think you're a naturally optimistic person. Yeah, there was times I would talk to you and I'd be like, hey, Mike, what's up, man? You're like, oh, man, everything is great. I'm doing great. How you doing? Oh, man, things are so good. If they were any better, I'm like, why am I talking to this guy?
I never said it like that.
but I didn't mean, you know, not literally. But yeah, I mean, yeah. You're so optimistic. And that's something that never came naturally to me. So I had to really work on that. So that is something that I've worked on in the past, and I still work on it from time to time. Maybe I don't work on it as much as I used to, but I still do. Secondly, I have to remember not to take things personal. Again, being that hard-edged New Yorker, everybody in the, what's the matter? You don't like the food that I made for you? You're not going to eat the freaking food? I made this food for you, Joe. You better eat this damn sandwich. You know, why are you getting so upset? Because the guy doesn't want your sandwich. You know, like... So it's the same thing. Why are you getting so upset? Because the person didn't like your song, or they didn't answer your email when you thought they should have answered your email,
right.
or you know, they didn't text you back right away, or you know. So again, I had to learn. Don't take things so sensitive. First of all, we're all human beings. We're all of the human race, and we all have a lot of stuff going on. We're all busy. We all have life. And you never know what that other person on the other end of the line or the under the end of the email or the other end of the earth, whatever they're, you don't know what's going on with them. So don't take it personally. So that's how I dealt with rejection. And then I also had to realize, wait a minute, if somebody that you're working with is hiring you for one thing, like if somebody hired me for my guitar skills because they thought I was a good guitarist and then I could get their job done, I can help facilitate their vision of what they hear, right? They hired me for that. But then I think, well, you hired me for guitar, but I'm also a great artist. You should hear the way I write songs. You should hear the way I sing. I'm really good. Well, no, because they hired you as they know what you do. They know that you're a guitar person. They know you're an expert in that field. They didn't ask you to come in and write the song with them. They didn't ask you to compose the score. They hired you to play guitar on the score or play guitar on the song. Mm-hmm. So know your lane, know your role. Now, if you're not happy with that, if you say, I'm tired of playing guitar for everybody, I want to be my own composer, my own artist. And guess what? You sound like me, because that's exactly what I did. Yeah. I said, wait a minute. I'm playing all this beautiful guitar for everybody else, but I know I'm a good composer and I know I'm a good artist. So I'm going to start doing it. So for the past 10 years, that's what I've been doing, is really focusing my energies on that. Again, without being annoyed at people or pissed off that people just don't hire me to compose their, you know what I started doing? I'm like, I'm a composer. Okay. It didn't really sink in until I started telling all my friends and colleagues and started passing the word around and said, listen, I'm a composer and here's how I'll prove it. Send me a picture to score. I'll score anything for you. It could be a short, it could be a documentary, it could be a minute long little monologue. I don't care what it is. I'll score it for free because I like you. And I just want to show you that we can work together in this capacity.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, what happens? I start getting a bunch of things to score. I did a bunch of free things. And then what happens? People start emailing. Hey, I have this piece. I only have 1,500, but do you think you could do that? Blah, blah, blah. You know, then money starts to, again, put it out there. Don't take offense to it. You know, these are some of the tools that I've used.
Well, no, that's great, because a lot of that comes down to just branding. And it goes to show that you can brand yourself multiple times throughout your life. You can also brand yourself differently to different groups of people. And that's definitely something that, as you know, I dealt with for many years too, because in certain circles, I was seen as just the technical guy who would, like, you know, I could record people's music, and that's not what I enjoyed doing, but I would do it. You know, if I needed some money, I would go mix a song or go record for people. In other circles, I was the songwriter, co-writer, producer guy. You know, they'd write with and just produce the songs for him. And then in other circles, I was the guy who was playing guitar on TV shows. But a lot of times it didn't mix. Mm. You know, like I was playing for the composers, but I wasn't obviously writing with the composers, nor was I really doing any production work with them. But sometimes it would mix too. And it's interesting that, like, you kind of do fall into these little buckets, at least I saw in my career, that this group saw me as this. And anytime I really tried to rock that boat, it didn't really work out so well.
Yes.
So then I learned, you know what, if I'm going to do this, when I get into a new group, when I am out at a new event, I really had to learn very specifically how to pitch myself. Because, like, I remember going to an event, sitting around a table, and some guy came to the table, and it was a composer's event, and it was actually out in Pasadena. And there's probably, like, I forgot how many people now, there's, you know, 5 or 6 people there. And this guy came up to the table and he said, you know, so what do you all do? And everyone was like, I'm a composer, I'm a composer, I'm a composer. I remember it came to me and I was like, I'm a composer. And it bothered me the rest of the night. I still remember on the drive home, driving down the 134 in my car, I still remember thinking, I need to figure out a way to make myself stand out.
That's
because,
right.
Because I just got lumped into this thing, but I'm much more than what I just told people I was, you know?
That's
and
right.
had to learn how to actually really craft what I really think of as, like, the elevator pitch. How can you say something that adds so much value in 3 or 4 sentences? And that's, you know, super important.
The elevator pitch. And here's the problem. My wife and I have talked about it for years now, for over 10 years since we've been together. We've been discussing the elevator pitch because we are so versatile, right? And again, that's not like a pat on the shoulder. It's just like, it's because, number one, we have to learn how to do a lot of different things in today's day and age. you have to diversify. It's just what it is. So you develop these alternate skill sets. And then when you do get asked and your elevator pitch is coming up and you might be, like you said, at a big event and you want to make a good impression, well, I'm a producer, I'm a composer, I'm a guitar, you know, so you can't do that because then you just sound like a bozo, you know.
Yeah.
It, there's an art to developing your elevator pitch that makes you stand out, unique, but still covers the things that you feel good about, right?
Hey, I wanted to press pause on this podcast for a second and let you know that if any of your goals over the next year include recording and releasing a new album, generating placements of your songs on TV shows, films, and commercials, building a fan base that will sustain your career, or just transitioning into full-time music, I want to invite you to my special workshop, Real Musicians Don't Starve. In this workshop, we're going to focus on the three keys to your success, and you're going to learn an extremely powerful strategy that allows you to create your own wow factor. And this allows you to attract opportunities to you and your music, as well as remove any financial worry that you may have pursuing a career as a musician. And you can check out this workshop for free at realmusiciansdontstarve.com/workshop. Now let's jump back into the podcast. You know, the thing with the elevator pitch is it should always be directed towards the value that you can bring to the person who's asking you. And that to me is the key. You know, it's not about what I do. It's about the value that you provide. And that's what's going to make you stick out. You know, that's such a key element in just branding and networking and getting out there. And that's a skill set that a lot of musicians don't have.
That's right.
You know. So I have one more question for you. I love asking this one too. If you could go back in time, you know, 28 years ago.
Yeah. Oh,
and sit at a diner. I'm not saying how old you would be. I'm just saying, let's just say 28 years ago.
Whereas I'm 48. Yeah. I think you're right behind me, though, aren't you?
I am right behind you, man. If you could go back in time to, you know, 20-year-old Michael Nomad Rapol and sit at a diner and sit across the table and have a conversation as he's now just starting on his journey, looking back, knowing what you know, what are two pieces of advice that you would give to yourself?
Number one, believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. Don't be such a stunad, as the Italians say. Don't be so hard on yourself. Give yourself some slack. Believe in yourself. You can do it. You will do it. As long as you believe it, you will. And remember, whether you say you can or you can't, you're right. So if you say, I can't be an artist, then you're never going to be an artist. But if you say, I can be an artist, then you're going to be an artist. And that's something that my 20-year-old self didn't really fully grasp. You know,
yeah.
That's the first piece of advice. The other piece of advice is I would have said, don't do it for other people. Do it for yourself. What do I mean? Well, look, I am so grateful, knock wood here. You know, I thank God every day. I have made a great living out of being what we call in the industry a side man, which means you stand on the side while the artist is front and center. Right? I would have said, no. Don't do it for them. Do it for you. You have the ability to be that person. Do it for you. Now, in the beginning, if you know that you're an artist, or let's put artist, let's make sure that word is framed properly. You are the composer. You are the artist on stage. You are the producer who calls the shots. You know, you are the director, whatever that artist term is. If that's the main person you want to be, the main title you want to hold, whatever that title is, it might be more difficult in the beginning. You might have to starve a little bit in the beginning because you can't just come out and say, I'm an artist at 20 years old. Although we do like young artists, so you can do that. But as a producer or a director, it might be a little harder, but it's still possible. Now, you might not get the calls to make the $500, you know, a night jobs as a side person, but that's okay. You say, you know what? No, I'm going to sacrifice that 500, or back then maybe it was 200, whatever it was, that job playing guitar for so-and-so, because I'm going to stay home in the studio and really work on my own thing. You know what I mean? Or if you go and take it with session work. Oh, hey, man, I got a session. You and I were just talking about this. I got a session. I need you to play guitar in two songs. It's not really what I do. What do you mean it's not really what you do? You're a great guitar player. What are you talking about? I've heard your stuff. Yeah, I just don't really do that much anymore. Oh, man. So again, you said no, and you stood by it. You might have let somebody down, but guess what? I'd rather let a few people down here and there and keep myself content mm-hmm. than vice versa.
Yeah. You know, I think that a lot of people say in the music industry, you got to say yes to everything. And the people who say that are 100% wrong. I will tell you that one of the best decisions I ever made in my life, and I still look back on it without going into detail of the story, was I said no. And had I said yes to it, my life would have gone a completely different direction. If I'd have said yes to one thing, one night, one show, my life would have gone a completely different direction. Yeah, completely different direction, and not in a good way. And it was, and I still remember getting the phone call. I was sitting at a Starbucks off of, in Sherman Oaks, actually off of, Ventura Boulevard.
Your favorite one. We used to meet there all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, we did. And I remember I was with my friend Amanda at the time, and I let the phone go to voice memo. I checked it and I said, oh, I don't want to do this. She goes, well, Michael, just say no to it. And I remember I said, well, you know, it's going to pay. She goes, you don't need the money. Just say no. And I said, no. And I literally thank God every day for that. That wow. Without going into the detail of what happened, one of the best decisions I ever made. Well, I'll tell you the story. What happened was, if I'd have said yes, I would have played with a band that I couldn't stand, opening up for a pretty big band. That was the key part of it. It was an opening gig at the House of Blues for a band that I love. Now, the flip side of it is that one of my biggest influences and idols, who I ended up working with for quite some time, I had just met him a month or two prior, and he was a big fan of this band. He got there early and was in the front row. At that time, my buddy was playing drums for him, and the next day, you know, after rehearsal, he came home and he goes, man, look, good thing you didn't do that show, because all he was talking about all rehearsal long was how bad that opening band was, how they just made them sick, how like they're just a bunch of day job musicians, how they had no business being up on stage. And I ended up having a pretty long career working with this guy. And if I'd have said no, and it opened up a ton of doors for me. And if I'd have said yes to that gig, I would have been lumped into this group. And
you would have written you off. Yeah.
I would have been written off, and I would not have had the opportunities that allowed me to ascend to certain levels that I got up to.
That's beautiful. I think I know who you're talking about too.
Yeah, you know. So it's one of those things where, and you have to say, if it doesn't, and I hated that band, I hated the music, hated everything. But what kind of kept me on the fence for a very short time was, you know, it was a couple $100. Do I do it? I remember my friend just saying, Michael, you don't need the money. Yeah, you're right. She's like, I was like, but they're opening up for this band. She's like, well, then just go pay $30 and go see the show.
And it's so funny, but let me speak on that. If you're a young musician, perhaps, or I don't care how old you are, if you're a musician and you say, yeah, but I really do, you might not think it's a lot of money, Mike. I need the $150. I need the $200. Listen, if you feel that you're going to have to sacrifice that much happiness to go do this, please don't do it. Think of another way to make the $150 or the $200. Be creative. You know, and that's what I'm talking about when I say sacrifice. And that's what I'm talking about when I would have spoke to my 20-year-old self. Don't just jump because people are dangling a check or some cash. Don't. And that is a musician issue, because we're independent contractors, and we only make money when the gigs are coming, you know, from gig to gig to gig. But I really do like that story. And I really do think we all have to listen to that inner voice. Yeah. Seriously, be honest with ourselves.
So I would love it if you could talk a little bit about The Career Musician and your podcast, and share that with everyone.
So The Career Musician is a term that I coined because, you know, I made a career out of being a professional musician, period, end of story. And people say, well, what's a career? Well, what do you think it is? It's exactly what it sounds like, you know, number one. Okay. Number two, it's something that I've been dabbling with for years. And I finally decided, you know what? I have lots of friends and colleagues and peers in the business that I really like, I respect, and I think their stories should be heard. So I started with a podcast, the Career Musician Podcast, and I'm still at that level. I'm still in phase one. The podcast is just that. It's a forum where I can interview some of my colleagues and peers and some people that I haven't even met yet, but whom I look up to, and you know, they agree to the interview, and I just want their story to be told. Just like what you're doing right here. It's an open book forum for other musicians, career musicians, to say, well, this is how I did it. Because again, if you want to be successful in anything, what's the best way to start? Well, I kind of believe that you reverse engineer what other people have done so successfully. So you look at what they've done, you analyze it, and you say, well, if they did this, great. What can I deduce from how they did it? Oh, I can take this, 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 but what if I started over here and did this? You know, so you formulate your little strategy, your plan. And that's what we all have to do, because we are independent contractors who don't starve. And thank God I've had ups and downs, but I'm not living under a bridge.
Right. Well, I mean, the ups and downs you're going to have in any industry, but the wonderful thing about, you know, like a podcast like what you have, and even you know, like a podcast like this, is that, you know, it's one thing to look at what other musicians have done. You know, and you can read about that stuff in magazines and books and stuff like that. But I think through the podcast, through the actual interviews, you get to learn how they think. And to me, that's even more important. Like, yeah, I could copy everything that Nomad has done in his career. But the reality is that until I actually learn how he's thinking and how he's approaching it, it's really not going to be effective. And so that's one of the powerful aspects of, you know, I listen to a podcast probably like every day, if not every other day. And and for me, it's just about learning really how other people think and being able to take one little nugget from this interview and another nugget from this interview and then, you know, combining it. And you learn so much, because now we have that ability. Now we can actually learn what these people were thinking and why they made certain decisions and stuff like that. And the experiences that they had that were beneficial and negative to making those decisions. And I think that's really important, to learn how other people think.
That's so true. And like we were talking about earlier, how I say I condition myself. I do the same thing when I'm working out. I listen to podcasts or, you know, YouTube speeches or lectures or whatever. And it's important I believe it's important, especially that it's available to us today, put that good energy in, put that good information in. The more good you put in, the better it's gonna come out, and you know, you're gonna kinda, it's gonna internalize it, you're gonna ingest it and digest it and figure it out, and it's gonna come out in your own daily life.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I wanna thank you for coming and hanging out with us and sharing some of your knowledge and experience. And I always love to end with our manifesto, and you know, kind of as you were saying, when I asked you about the two things that you would go back and say to yourself when you were 20 years old, one of the things is really how you speak to yourself. And I think it's important, the words that we speak to ourselves. You know, when we say specific things to us, like to ourselves, like you know, I can't do it. You know, kind of what you said. If you think you can, you're right. If you think you can't, you're right. That's a great Henry Ford quote. But it's true. What we say to ourselves is important. And so this manifesto is something that I think is really important for every musician who's listening to internalize and make it a part of yourself. And it's very simple. And that is, room musicians are business owners and our business is music. Now, a business is simply an organization where value is provided in order to make a profit. And unlike starving musicians who operate with a mindset of scarcity and fear, as success-driven musicians, we operate with a mindset of abundance, confidence, and service. We are doers, we are dreamers, we are creators, and we are achievers. We know that our true value is determined by how many people we serve and how well we serve them, because our truth is, real musicians don't starve.
I love it.
It's a great manifesto to internalize.
Incredible. You know? Which reminds me, just my tagline for the Career Musician, I forgot to say it, is empowering musicians with strategies for a sustainable career. So it's, you know, very similar. It's like, hey, teaching musicians that we don't have to starve. And here are some options.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And so if you want to check out Michael's podcast.
Nomad's Podcast.
Nomad's Podcast. I'm sorry. I've known him for so long.
If you want to career musician by Nomad.
Yeah. If you want to check out Nomad's podcast, just get on your favorite podcasting platform and look up The Career Musician.
Yeah, and we're on YouTube now as well.
Oh, fantastic.
Yep, and check us out on IG, Facebook, all the above. Just say hi, drop in, check it out. And you know what? The biggest thing is what I'm asking people now, if you dig the podcast, if you can go to Apple Podcasts and rate it and leave a review, that would be amazing. If you don't dig the podcast, rate it and leave a review. That would be just as amazing.
I've known Nomad for 15 years now, and I have to say that he, throughout my career, he might not realize it, but he was one of the most influential people that I've met through my career, and he helped me a lot, especially in the mid 2000s. Kind of really jumpstart my guitar career in Los Angeles, and got me on a bunch of TV shows that he was playing on, and a bunch of endorsements. And so he's just a fantastic individual and very knowledgeable, very skilled. I definitely recommend checking out The Career Musician for sure.
Well, I really appreciate that, Michael, and ditto. We helped each other, and we still help each other. That's the whole point.
Of course. Absolutely.
Yeah, you helped me earlier before we started, so.
All right, guys. Well, Michael, thank you for coming and hanging out. And everyone, we will see you in the next episode.